Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. The release of the Missouri Assessment Program, or MAP, test scores last week has proved both troublesome and disappointing on a lot of fronts, especially for the St. Louis public school system. It scored about half of what is needed to maintain the provisional accreditation it received last fall from DESE, the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. DESE uses standards of the Missouri School Improvement Program to determine accreditation. St. Louis received that provisional accreditation by MCIP 4 standards, I should say. This year, DESE used a new formula called MCIP 5. A number of districts perform poorly under the new system. They and St. Louis will have a year or two to improve their scores or risk reduced accreditation status. A demotion for St. Louis schools would mean loss of accreditation again and open the door to the kind of controversial and expensive transfer of students we have seen recently from the unaccredited Normandy and Riverview Gardens districts. So a lot at stake. I'm Don Marsh. Joining us by phone to talk about the most recent test scores and methodology is Margie Van Deven, the Deputy Commissioner of Learning Services for DESE. She joins us by phone. With me in studio is Professor Kathleen Sullivan Brown, Associate Professor and Chair of Educational Leadership and Policy Studies at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. I thank you both so much for being with us.
I'm glad to be here.
Margie, nice to talk to you long distance. Well, it's been quite a week for your folks. What's your take on what has happened with the release of these test scores, Margie?
Well, overall, we're pleased with the results. Most of the districts seem to have risen to the occasion as we were hoping would take place. Anytime you shift systems, you're looking at, as you mentioned earlier, we were using something called the Missouri School Improvement Program, the fourth version. We've moved to MCIP 5, the fifth version, and we have increased the rigor. We've looked at some standards quite differently. Overall, again, districts have risen to that occasion. We certainly did see some disappointing results for some districts as well.
And St. Louis certainly being one of those. If you would, Margie, tell us what the difference is between MCIP 4 and 5 of those standards.
So we continue to look at the Missouri Assessment Program, the MAP test. So we continue to look at your English language arts test. Those have not changed. We continue to look at the math test. That has not changed. We've added a component for science and for social studies. So although districts had been using those tests in their systems, they weren't being held accountable to them at this point in time. So until this year, we were only looking at English language arts and math. We're adding science and social studies. Another big shift is that in previous iterations, we looked at how many students were enrolled in advanced courses, for example, how many students were enrolled in dual credit courses. For MCIP 5, we're actually looking at successful completion, so students must actually perform well in those courses in order to be included in that count. We also have a shift in the attendance rate. Previously, we were looking at the aggregate of the students. We called it the average daily attendance, so we looked at all students and the overall percentage rates, which would mean we could have some students there 100% of the time, and they could compensate for students who were not in attendance. This new system, we're calculating 90% of the students must be there 90% of the time. So it's looking at every individual child. So I really think the big shift has been looking at a more robust system, looking at the individual child, we've added some career readiness indicators. Previously we had ACT. We're trying to reach out and say, okay, what if they take the SAT? What if they take the Compass? What if they take the ASVAB for military? So looking at different paths for children to take. So again, much more complex, much more rigorous, hopefully much more diagnostic for our schools and districts.
Well, I've heard some people suggest that it might not be necessarily a fair test in the sense that there might be an urban bias associated with this. Is that a reasonable conclusion, do you think?
I would say that if you look at the breakdown of our scores, you'd have to look at the various subgroups. And unfortunately, Missouri still has a significant gap in student performance. And when you look at race, ethnicity, free and reduced price lunch counts, students with disabilities, limited English proficient students, they are still scoring significantly below the state as a whole. And I think at times you will see that those populations are clustered more in the urban areas. But I think, we'd really like, we think it's a very fair system. in the terms of, you know, all students need to achieve, all students need to be college and career ready, and that's really what the goal of this is promoting, is preparing every child.
I'd like to bring Kathleen Sullivan Brown into the discussion right here. Kathleen, what do you think? Do you think that this is a fair standard for the urban districts?
Well, I know that the commissioner has put in place a new goal. It's called, I think, 20 by 20. So we want Missouri as a state to be in the top 20 by the year 2020. And I think in order to do that, you have to do something like this. You have to have the standards continuing to rise, to increase. I have mixed feelings about the, when you have the question of urban bias, because many districts in Missouri, we have 522 districts in the state because we have a lot of geography to cover. So you have a lot of districts outstate that don't have to deal with a lot of the issues of subgroups. Now, they may have poor students who qualify for free and reduced lunch. That's a proxy variable for students living in poverty. They may have students with IEPs, but they may not have the issues of race, quite difference in class in within a single school, differences in nationalities. I heard from one St. Louis principal the other day who has 28 languages spoken in her school. So that's a, you know, when you're comparing urban St. Louis with that kind of context with some of the small, very rural or small town districts where they don't have to be dealing with that particular challenge, that should be factored in.
But there are other things that come into play, and Margie, I'll take this back to you and then to Kathleen. Other factors come into play when we talk about an urban district where there is a heavy poverty rate, where there are single-parent households, where many of the students, in fact, are homeless. It seems to me that making these kinds of tough judgments that could be so costly to a school district should be taking some of these things into consideration.
Yeah, no doubt about it that poverty is a challenge for our districts, and I do think you would see those numbers statewide. Certainly a challenge, and we don't want to overlook that. But the reality is these children need to be able to read. They need to be able to write. They need to be able to compute math. We're hoping that they are entering into colleges and successfully entering into careers. And to be able to do that, you must be able to demonstrate proficiency on some of these. I'm not saying that standardized testing is the only way to measure the proficiency, but that is certainly a tremendous indicator of whether or not our kids can read, write, compute basic mathematical equations. And that's really where our focus is. It shouldn't matter whether or not that child comes from a home of poverty or not. Our responsibility is to ensure that that child reaches that capability and exits our systems to success into the community. I'd also like to just add one little other point. When we're talking about the system itself, we're not comparing them from district to district. Now, obviously, when we get the results back and we see this district earn this percentage of points and another district earn this percentage of points, the logical thing to do is to compare them. But MCIP 5 has been established on standards. It's a standards-based system, and it's saying this is what we in the state of Missouri believe all kids should know and be able to do, and this is what we believe all districts and schools should be held accountable to ensure that their children should know and be able to do. So it's not comparing them to one another. It's comparing them against a standard that we have established in the state.
Well, journalists have compared them, and I have a couple of notes here. It says under the old system, 31 area districts had perfect scores. Under MCEP 5, only one, that would be Brentwood, did. If accreditation were based on this scoring, the most recent 18 districts in the state would lose full accreditation, including University City and Ferguson Florissant would be demoted to provisionally accredited. So comparisons are being made. Sure. I wonder if that doesn't bring us to the point that standards mean that more districts won't meet the minimum standard for accreditation.
That is possible. That's why we're looking at 3 years of phasing this new system in. One, it allows us time to read the system. It allows time for the districts to establish the types of supports they need to put into place to reach full accreditation. So that's why for the last 2 or 3 years we've been talking about this would be the first release. We'd be looking at this APR for accreditation purposes, but we would be making those recommendations to the State Board of Education in 2015 using all three APRs.
Well, some of the figures I've seen, 3 years is one that I hadn't heard. I'd heard that the next step would be in either 1 or 2 years, but it's going to be a full 3 years before the next accreditation round comes through.
Right. What we've been looking at is establishing 3 years, the 2013, the 2014, and the 2015 APR, and that's how we would determine the district's accreditation. Now, we've always said that with the caveat that the State Board of Education does have the authority to make an accreditation determination at any point in time, and there have been districts who have indicated that they would like to come to the State Board earlier than the three-year to request that, and if we do see some extreme shifts, you know, the State Board of Education may decide it like to take something earlier than 3 years.
You had indicated in the new ground rules that are being used, new standards that are being used, that college and career readiness is one of the factors. Once again, I don't want to beat this dead horse, but I wonder if that doesn't penalize again the kids from the poorer districts who, in most likelihood, are not going to be going to college.
Well, again, that's one of the areas that we were really trying to focus on, different avenues for different types of children. So that's where I was talking about the ACT score, the SAT score, the ASVAB, again, is used for the military. The COMPAS is a score that is often used in some of our community colleges and so forth. We also have a component that talks about successful completion and dual credit courses that provides earlier experiences for, again, college courses in the high school environment. However, in addition to that, you could also perform well on a technical skills attainment that is recognized as an industry recognized credential. So if a student, for example, does well on a welding test, that may be used in place of a college readiness indicator. Again, ultimate goal, these kids are going somewhere when they exit the K-12 system. Hopefully it's either to a job that will provide them and their families some stability and or college or other. I mean, most careers do require some form of additional training once they leave high school. So looking at all of those components, the college placement standard does look at just additional training. It doesn't have to be a four-year university. It's just we're hoping these kids are going somewhere and being successful.
What did you want to add something, Kathleen?
Well, I wanted to ask Margie about one thing. When I look at the guidelines that DESE put out for understanding the new MSIP 5 regulations, there is, as you were just talking about, you can look at outcomes data, how many students actually passed the AP test, how many took the dual credit and got credit. But there's also a growth or a progress factor, which I would think should help some of the struggling districts. If you can show that our students are starting at a fairly low level, but we are making progress, we are bringing them up to where we all want them to be. And I guess it was a little disappointing in terms of the, in particular, the St. Louis Public Schools with their low rank, their low outcome on the accreditation factors, because I would think that we are seeing some progress. Does the new MSIP 5 reflect that or not?
Yeah, that's a great point, Kathleen. I appreciate you bringing that up. When we've been working on this new iteration of MSIP for almost 4 years now, and we've been going around the state for at least the last three, meeting with stakeholders of all sorts, administrators, teachers, parents, business leaders, what should the accountability system really measure and value? And overwhelmingly, folks came back and said it should look at performance. It should look at outcomes, but it should also recognize improvement. It's called the Missouri School Improvement Program for a reason. We're really focusing on that. So that was one of the, it does recognize improvement from year to year. So again, that was one of the pieces that some folks asked how that would pan out if you got a high percentage amount of points and your neighboring district got a high for progress and your neighboring district got them for high performance, what that might look like to the general public and if they would understand that. But overwhelmingly, the folks said we need to recognize and honor improvement. So yes, we would have liked to have seen much more of that in the St. Louis Public School APR. We did not this time. We're hoping to see that next year.
Turning to the St. Louis public school system, my understanding is that they received just a little less than half the percentage they would need for provisional accreditation, if in fact that were to be determined today. We had an opportunity to hear Kelvin Adams, the superintendent of schools in St. Louis, talk about his disappointment, if you will, over the results of this most recent testing. And he had a news conference. We have excerpts of that news conference I'd like to play now with regard to that disappointment and where he thinks he's going to be able to take the district. Here's Dr. Kelvin Adams.
We are not pleased with the results, obviously. But we feel that over the next 2 years, because we believe that there's a three-year window of time as relates to MCIP 5, that we will be in the same position we were right now. So with that said, I'll take any kind of questions that you might have. But I guess the crux of this is that we have still a lot of work to get done. This is a new assessment. MCIP 5 is new. This is the first total year for a review of the data relative to that. We have some 37 schools that are provisionally accredited or fully accredited, 7 with distinction, some really positive results, but still some real challenges. I think it means that we have to do better around the new assessment. I don't know that it's a pie in the face. Again, part of the reason why the state is looking at 3 years of data for MCIP 5 is for the reason you just indicated. We did not meet the standard relative to MCIP 5. If we were looking at MCIP 4 data, we would be about the same place we were. But basically, you take MCIP 4 data and for last year and look at the data that we received this year, and you calculate it, it's about the same. But the new standard requires some different things that we need to look at, and we're putting those things in place. Presently, we are looking to spend approximately $3 million for tutoring for all of our students in our lowest achieving schools, so one-on-one tutoring for students. I am responsible for the lowest set of schools this year, some 18 schools. I am directly responsible for those schools. They're called Superintendent Zone. We have made 17 principal changes and restructured some persons in central office as well, such that those persons are responsible for a smaller group of schools, such that movement can take place. So those are the four key things that we've done at the beginning of this school year to try to address what we perceive to be issues moving forward. I'm extremely confident, I know you may not think that next year the results will be totally different. I would not remain as superintendent unless we can do better. The whole work of the whole thing around this piece is making sure that this community feels good about the St. Louis Public Schools. And obviously, this kind of assessment has an impact on how people feel about the district. I think what you can share is that we are aware of where we are. We are concerned, but we are confident that next year the results will look different. Tremendously different, I'm not going to say, but look different. There are individual schools that are doing tremendous work and doing a great job. There are schools that are at risk. And again, I want to caution the media as much as I possibly can. A zero doesn't mean that every single kid scored a zero. It does not mean that. It means that the overall growth in that particular school is a zero based upon the state's assessment of putting all of the students together. And the score around growth did not occur. It did not reach the level that the state has measured. I think I would say look at the score of an individual school. Look at how your teacher is providing support to students. But again, we have still the top high school in the state. 7 of the top schools are listed as distinction. 18 of those schools are listed as provisionally accredited. 13 is fully accredited. So I think you have to look at the whole piece, not just a score on a piece of paper. I think that's what the real caution is here. It's very easy to jump to a score and say, wow, 24, the district is failing. Based on this assessment, the district has struggled with MCIP 5. The district will not struggle next year with MCIP 5.
Dr. Kelvin Adams, the superintendent of schools in the city of St. Louis, talking about the test scores that came in last week. Margie, what is the city going to have to do? I mean, it's one thing to say you're going to do better next year, but what specifically must it do in order to get these scores up?
Well, I think one of the strategies that Dr. Adams spoke to was something else we've added to the MCIP 5 component, and that is for the first time with MCIP, we're issuing school-level reports so that you can truly analyze what's happening in each individual building, and parents have access to these individual school reports so they can look at what's happening in those actual school buildings. And I think that's where he's starting, and that's a good strategy to look at where our highest performing, what's working, what's not, how can we replicate what's working in some of our other schools. But the bottom line is, you spoke about Brentwood earlier and their 100% score, and I would have to say I loved the superintendent's quote on that when he was asked about the 100%, and I'm reading, I read this in the paper, but it just said his quote was, "We didn't focus on earning a perfect score. We focused on educating every single child." And I think that's really what St. Louis has been focusing and working to do. It's educating the children, and helping them move along and finding their place in society so that the score takes care of itself in the end.
I've read. Did you want to add to that, Kathleen?
Well, I did want to reemphasize what Dr. Adams said about the individual schools and that many, many of them are doing well. There are good schools, good teachers, good principals in the St. Louis Public Schools District. But the state process that we have doesn't, as Margie said, maybe this time for the first time, we are beginning to look at that. Because what happens when you see the accreditation outcome, the bottom line is, it's all those schools are painted with the same brush, that the district is, in as Dr. Adams said, failing or not meeting its obligations. And that's very difficult. It's very difficult on the staff in terms of their morale. It's difficult to hire new teachers, when you have that kind of reputation going out there. And so I think we need to do a better job of separating the district and the school outcomes.
I think, Margie can't stay with us very much longer, but I think the elephant in the room is this whole specter of possible another transfer of students program having to go into effect. If, in fact, and everybody wants the St. Louis school system to do well, but if, in fact, it doesn't meet the necessary criteria, we are back in one of these awful messes transporting God knows how many children to other districts in order to be educated. I'm sure you folks at DESE are thinking about that, and I understand that DESE may be changing its approach to dealing with these struggling districts. Is that the case, Margie?
We are absolutely, putting all the energy that we possibly can into and thinking about a statewide system that would be much more effective for some of our struggling school districts. Regarding the transfer situation, again, that's legislative. It's the state law that is regulating that component. So we at DESE do not have authority over changing the regulation. That's something that we're just looking at the best way to enforce that particular part of state law. The MCIP is the accreditation system that does determine whether or not, a school district is unaccredited. But the transfer component is really something just a little bit separate. But you're right. The overall concern of the agency is how do we ensure that all kids are learning?
All right, Kathleen.
I guess I'm a bit concerned that we don't have the resources at DESE or locally to help these struggling schools. We had a few years ago, I recall, we had some districts that were in difficulty, and we brought in something called success teams. And we brought in some experts, and I'm not sure that helped. Now, maybe this approach is going to look a little different, but I think we need to find out what's going on. When I look at the districts that are really struggling in our community, I see people have talked about a component of race. They've talked about a component of poverty. Another one that I would add is that there have been a tremendous number of leadership transitions in these struggling districts, both at the superintendent level and at the board level. And that, I think, also has to be factored in.
I have a question here that's been emailed in, Margie. Did this year's assessment show improvement from last year, or will that not start till next year? In other words, must be able to compare apples and apples instead of apples and oranges.
It actually started this year, so that's a little bit of the part that's tricky to explain. The tests themselves, so English language arts, for example, the MAP tests have not changed. So, but the way that we're including them in the annual performance report is different. So you heard Dr. Adams talk about in fourth cycle, we would look at the MAP scores for grades 3 through 5 and compare them to grades 3 through 5. Now we just look at the entire system. So we talk about what's happening in grades 3 through 8 plus at the high school, and we report that in English language arts. So what we did was we went back and converted those scores from the 2013 results, looked at the 2012 results calculated that way, and the 2011, and used 3 years of data so that we were comparing apples to apples and making these determinations.
Well, we're going to have to leave it at that with you, Margie Van Deven. Thank you so much for being with us. Margie's representative from DESE, Deputy Commissioner of Learning Services for DESE. Thank you so much for spending some time and giving us the benefit of your knowledge on this subject. A lot of people are still trying to wade through it and understand it fully, but we are very thankful for your help with us.
Well, I certainly thank you for the opportunity. It's something that really does take the entire community to work around. So as many people as can become informed on this and can make it a priority is, you know, that's where it's going to happen. So thank you very much.
Okay, and thanks once again to you. We have to take our break now. We'll do that. We'll come back with Professor Kathleen Sullivan Brown from the University of Missouri, St. Louis, to continue the conversation. And we'd also like to bring you into it. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. We'd like to get your take on the results and maybe have some ideas for how we can do a better job of educating our kids. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. And before we continue our conversation on this recent report card on Missouri public school performance, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following. MoDOT officially began work today on the so-called park over the highway near the Arch grounds. And Kiplinger's Personal Finance lists St. Louis as a top 10 city for cheapskates, insisting we take it as a compliment. Kiplinger says the ranking is primarily due to the affordability of housing in the region, saying expenses fall 27% below the national average. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now we'll continue our conversation with Professor Kathleen Sullivan Brown, Associate Professor and Chair of Educational Leadership and Policy Studies at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. The next step, I guess, again, I go back to what I call the elephant in the room is a transfer situation, Kathleen. The next step is really up to the legislature. I have to assume that everybody, from the mayor of St. Louis to educators such as yourself and DESE, will be actively lobbying legislators to change the so-called Turner Rule on the transfers.
Yes, I think that there's already a lot of talk about that. The question is, how do you change it? The transfer idea came up 20 years ago, and it sort of lay there dormant until recently when we had this issue come up. So I think that the legislatures who actually passed that probably aren't, they certainly are not in the legislature anymore. And so you have a whole new set of people looking at education policy. And we have a tough time right now in terms of getting consensus on that, what that policy should be. And again, I also relate it to Missouri is both a very urban state with Kansas City and St. Louis, and we're a very rural state with a lot of small communities. So finding an education policy that fits both of those, plus our suburban communities, is difficult. So a one-size-fits-all policy is hard to come by. I also have to talk in this conversation about what we spend on education. And I know a lot of people say, there you go, those educators are always looking for more money. But Missouri ranks very far down the list of the 50 states.
The 47th or 48th, isn't it?
47th or 48th in both what we spend on K-12 education per student and what we spend on teacher salaries. So if we want good school outcomes, we have to put the resources in. Now, the other thing that's important to understand about all of these controversies that we're looking at in education is that Missouri is a very strong local control state. The idea that we've always had is that the state constitution puts the responsibility in the hands of the legislature, but it's actually operated, the school districts and so forth are operated through DESE, through locally appointed school boards and school districts. But the state philosophy gives a lot of power and autonomy and control to the local people, with the idea that those people know what they want. They tax themselves locally to pay for their schools. But that's also how we get the disparities, because we've got where I live, for example, in Kirkwood, we have a lot of resources, and the parents are very generous about putting those into schools. Other places don't have the tax base. They don't have the wealth that other districts do. And that's the way our funding system is set up.
But this is just going to cascade. As long as the current system persists, it's costing $35 million to affect this transfer program involving Normandy and Riverview Gardens. $35 bucks that those districts could sorely use.
Exactly. And what I would say, if I were a good businessman, I would say, or businesswoman, I would say, what's the strategic investment that we could make early and put the money in the right place at the beginning? And in fact, St. Louis Public Schools has done that. They've opened large numbers of early childhood classrooms in the last 2 years. So I think they are putting some of their resources in the right place. But as a state, we spend our adequate yearly target for spending is only $6,200. Our average spending is $9,500.
On what, per student?
Per student, average of all districts across the state. Clayton, as we've heard in these recent discussions, spends almost $18,000. So our state average is half of what our very successful districts are putting into it. And in part, that's why they're getting the outcomes. And the other thing is that you have to understand that the large percentage of that amount is teacher salary, because it's a very labor-intensive business. About 75% of a school district's budget, it goes into teacher salaries.
Well, shouldn't it?
I mean, yes, I agree. It should. Yeah. But if we are trying to underpay teachers, if we're trying to save money there, then it shouldn't be surprising that we get those outcomes, particularly in the districts that are under local control, that don't have resources to deal with it.
You say that if you were looking at it as a business person and strategizing, how about looking at it as a legislator and taking a look at where our state stands in the whole scheme of things?
Well, if I were a legislator, I would be looking at this from the standpoint of education overall as an investment in our state for the future. We cannot let particularly our K-12 education system and our higher education system go broke and have these kinds of outcomes if we want to be seen as a competitive player in today's economy. You simply cannot do it.
It's a no-brainer. I think that's the expression that a lot of people might use. I have to take a break now, Kathleen. Let's do that. We'll come back. We have a number of people on the line that want to get into the conversation. We'll do that as soon as we get back. My guest in studio, Professor Kathleen Sullivan Brown, Associate Professor and Chair of Educational Leadership and Policy Studies at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Back in just a moment, we'll take those calls. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We continue to discuss the recent report card on Missouri public school performance. My guest in studio from the University of Missouri, St. Louis, is Professor Kathleen Sullivan Brown. We are talking about what the test results have shown and also some of the things that could be done to get those test scores higher, particularly in districts like the city of St. Louis, which did very, very poorly in the most recent MAP testing. Let's go to the phones. We'll start with Jerry. Go ahead, Jerry.
Okay, listen, I was in the elementary and junior high and high school and the public schools during the 40s and 50s, and it was well known among many of us in those schools by the time we got to high school that after those 12 years, we knew who were the most academically successful students among our groups, and they were cleaner, better dressed, had nicer clothes, had better food in their lunch boxes when we were in elementary and middle school. They lived in bigger homes, and they had newer automobiles than some of the rest of us in the school. They had, and their family had a target on college that many of us, our families, really didn't talk about it until, or maybe never. And so they were simply more successful in our academic work and at report card times. When report cards came out, they got the better grades and the rest of us kind of got middle ones. And so what I would like to do is, I'm following a little bit on Kathleen Brown's comment in the financial area, that I'd like to see the Post-Dispatch do a report on the per capita income of each of the Missouri public schools and then report the findings of those from a financial standpoint, and I think they'll find that the wealthier people, for some reason, the kids do better in school. So that's my comment.
All right. Thank you for it, Jerry. Kathleen, you have a big smile on your face.
Well, yeah, I have a lot to say about that. I can, to use a personal example, I grew up not far from where we're sitting here. We're at Grand and Lindell. I grew up at 14th and Shoto in a public housing project. So I was a child who came out of poverty. We had tremendous issues in terms of income and getting food on our table. I remember it was a happy day when St. Vincent de Paul Society came by and brought us a nice big turkey for a holiday. And my clothes were hand-me-downs. I now have a PhD from Washington University. So I have to say that poverty does not cause children not to learn, and race does not cause children not to learn. It has a lot to do with the resources that they have. So you can correlate race and poverty, excuse me, along with the resources that are available and how those resources are deployed. Now, there's an absolutely wonderful study in education that talks about the differences in the vocabulary, the reading abilities of students when they're very young. Literally, students who come from the kinds of families that you just described have a very print-rich environment in their homes. They read, they go to museums, they go shopping. They compare prices. All of those are pre-literacy and pre-numeracy activities that help the child so that when they enter school, they're ready to sail.
And they have two-parent households for the most
part. And they often have a two-parent household. Yeah. So it's not wealth that causes people to be smart. It's the kinds of experiences that people can have with that kind of flexibility in their lives.
We have an email here from John to this point. It says, John says, sometimes the schools deserve the focus of our attention, but when it comes to overall student performance, the greater influences come from home, community, and the minority of bad actors in the student body. Unless we want to change the culture of many urban communities, I can't foresee any big changes in these test scores. Is that what you're saying?
Well, there's a professor named Tom Guskey who uses the analogy of a large school bus, and he uses that to show the entire school system. We have to have somebody to drive the bus. Maybe that's the superintendent, but we have to have, as he says, the parents. Maybe they're the wheels. We have to have the teachers. They're the seats. We have to have the windows, which is the curriculum. We have to have an engine, and the engine is the funding. And I could go on and on. You get the point. But the whole system, it's a big system, and it has many moving parts. If any one of those pieces or parts of the system break down, we need to address it. And we have struggling districts in our community where unemployment is extremely high, where the resources, the attendance of the students is a factor. So there's so many. There is no one silver bullet problem, and there is no one silver bullet solution.
Let's take a call from Mike calling from the city of St. Louis. Go ahead, Mike, and thanks for waiting.
Great, great topic today, and I just wanted to ask a basic question, similar to the previous caller who said maybe there's a difference between the socioeconomic aspects of the students. I wonder if there's a bit of a difference between the way that the tests are provided, the MAP tests are provided to the students. I understand some school districts in the city, there's certain measures taken to cover up things on the wall, et cetera, for you know, that might be used by the students during the test, and maybe even in rural areas, they will give the test to the students to take home as a family project. And that was just a comment that I heard. Don't know if there's any truth to it, but thought I'd ask, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Yes, that's a good point. When you are, if you go in to take, for example, the GRE or the law school admission tests, they have very tight security. You have to provide an ID and so forth. It's very strict control over the test administration. When you're talking about standardized tests that are given in, you know, thousands of schools, and they're done. Unfortunately, we just spend an awful lot of time on this, and maybe we don't spend enough time on these controls. But it can be an issue. There are ways that they do verification measures to if a school has some very unexpected results, low or high, those can be checked. So there are some measures to deal with that. But a bigger point, I think, is just. In education, we don't have the very sensitive diagnostic tools like you have in medicine, for example. If I go out and have my blood drawn and have lab work done, I can get a very sophisticated and sensitive reading of what the problem is and then find a solution. In education, we don't have those very sensitive measures. Our measures are much more blunt. And so we have to take these outcomes for what they are. They are signals as to what we should be doing differently.
All right. Let's take another call. Dale in St. Louis, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Yes. My question is, what is the cost of busing and the effect of busing? I know it helps in desegregation, but it also breaks up the community. And, you know, it's like when I was growing up, when all the neighbors knew everybody walking down, all the kids walking down the street and could keep an eye on things and stuff like that. And now, you know, all that's gone and there's no longer, who knows who's going to any school and who knows the kids up the street anymore.
Let's ask the professor.
Well, it is a big issue. Not busing per se, because if you looked all over the country, you would see that busing takes place successfully in all kinds of environments. You know, all rural kids a very large proportion of our rural students have to take a bus to school. It doesn't break up their communities. I think it's how we look at and think about busing. But I think we would all prefer a system where kids could walk to school and children would be known in the community by their neighbors. Unfortunately, our society has changed in such a way that we no longer have that. And if we have to bus kids from out of their own neighborhoods, we also have to make sure that we strengthen those neighborhoods some other way. If that's our only solution for, and even, you know, many of us in education question the idea that simply moving a child from one school to another is going to be so beneficial that it justifies that expense. I would rather put money into quality teachers, teacher salaries, getting help from our community, having parents be in school, tutoring and doing things like that. I think that's what we need.
Early childhood education would have to be a component of that
definitely.
As well. Yeah. Let's bring Art into the discussion, calling from St. Louis. Art, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Don. You know, I mentioned his name before, Dr. Kottmeyer. He was superintendent of St. Louis schools back in the 70s and got a high accolades from Senator Eagleton. He says the parents' attitude with respect to the importance of education has to be reinforced. Also, you have to reduce the number of school districts to 10. I guess he was talking to the St. Louis schools. But anyway, talking to the Howell school teachers out there in St. Charles, they recommended tracking of students be included. Now, back in the 80s,
Don't go off on a long thing on me here because time's getting away. Your point is that they should have stayed on a tracking system, right? Okay.
Yeah, point is that we're technological illiterates, and what they're doing is they're combining social sciences with physical sciences and average them out, and I don't see that they're gaining anything with respect to international competitiveness.
Let's bring the professor into this part of it. Go ahead.
Well, you have several things there. First, I definitely agree that the parents' attitude toward education is critical to a student's ultimate success in school. Unfortunately, as I said a minute ago, our society has changed. We have children who live in institutions. We have many children who are homeless. So it's not just a problem of the schools. It's a problem of our community, and we have to address it from a community perspective. There are differences now in how we look at the curriculum. We have a lot what we call integrated curriculum, and that's because we think that individuals have many talents, and you can actually bring those to bear in a group or a team, which is what a lot of businesses want us to do. They want people to come out of school with all kinds of skills, including the ability to work with a group of other people. So one of the things we try to do today is use a lot of cooperative learning, grouping students, and finding out what their strengths are so they can bring their talents to the table and then know what else they need to be learning.
We have a long email from Tamara, or Tamara here, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, going into the problem she's had enrolling a child in school. And she blames the administrative process and saying that it's just very, very weak in the city of St. Louis. Is this a problem? Is this affecting grades at all, affecting school performance?
Is this in terms of the transfer?
No, it's just in terms of getting a child enrolled in the school system. They're just one roadblock after another. Says it's administrative failure.
Well, that's possible. Sometimes people look at urban school systems and say, well, we ought to break them up. They're too big. They don't work. On the other hand, there are some large school districts that do function. So I think it's a matter of leadership, first of all. I think it's a matter of having systems that do work, and in part, it's the school board, or in our case, in St. Louis Public Schools and in Riverview Gardens, we have special administrative boards that have been put into place. If you can't get a child enrolled in school, I would take myself down to the whatever the central office is, and I think I would be there until the child physically be there until the child was enrolled.
We only have a minute left. We haven't talked about charter schools. How did they come out of this whole testing process?
Let me distinguish. The MAP, we've been talking about several things. The MAP scores are student scores, how students do in the English language arts and science and social studies and so forth. We're also talking about accreditation scores. And that's a score for a school district and a school. So when you look at both of those, the student scores and the school scores for charters, I haven't seen there are some highlights for some schools. St. Louis Charter School, for example, I think has shown quite well. And the KIPP program, which is highly touted, did fairly well, although perhaps not as well as they might have expected. So I think it's a good thing that we are looking and comparing those, but I haven't seen a great deal of exciting results yet from the charters.
All right. We'll have to leave it at that. Kathleen Sullivan Brown, Associate Professor at University of Missouri, St. Louis, thanks so much for being with us and helping us out during the course of this program.
I was happy to be here, Don.
We're happy to have you. And tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look back at the flood of 1993. Who can forget that? What are your memories of the flood? Email them to talk@stlpublicradio.org, and we'll put it on the air. Or plan a call-in tomorrow and tell us about your most vivid memory of that time 20 years ago. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.